Hi, my name is Lena Fersch and I have been in love with improvised theater for half my life. Lately, however, things haven't exactly been great. Improv and I were going through a rough patch and I need some outside help. I really want to get the spark back in the relationship. So I decided to talk to improvisers from around the globe to seek advice. How can I make up with improv? Let's find out. My guest in this episode was Amir Atzman from Tel Aviv in Israel. Amir works as a translator, he's a drama therapist, and also, of course, he's an improviser. He works with a company called Momentum Improv. Amir and I, we actually never met in person. I just took a workshop with him once in an online festival, and I really liked the way he taught, and I thought that he was a super interesting person, and I invited him to this podcast. Also, I figured who would be a better guest than a drama therapist to help me with my problem. We ended up talking about many different things. For example, what's up with zodiac signs and why wouldn't someone be super excited about Harry Potter? And of course, we also talked about quite a few topics related to improvisation. Keep listening for more.
So, first of all, I need some more information. Can you describe the problem in greater detail?
Of course, I'm happy to. I started improvising when I was 15, and for a really long time, to me, it felt like this art form gave me the freedom to express myself in whatever way I wanted. Mm-hmm. But lately, I felt like it was becoming more of a chore. I wasn't so inspired anymore, and also I noticed in myself that I was lacking commitment and I got frustrated with that. So I took a step back and that's where I am right now.
Wow.
Are you taking notes?
I am taking notes. Because I think this is a very common crisis, let's say. I think there's something about improv or maybe life in general that is constantly gravitating between freedom and feeling like we have a chore to do. And I think, I don't know if it's an improviser thing, I keep trying to characterize the improviser personality because I'm very interested in...
Interesting, you know, okay.
What different fields attract different people. And I think maybe like one section of the improviser population is people who are kind of very mentally sharp and also very critical and detail-oriented and judgmental. And they get into improv as a way of kind of releasing all of that. But it's you can't just release it. It's part of who you are. So it's a constant battle between embracing that freedom and being able to be free. And then, you know, that part of the mind says, no, this needs to be better, this needs to be like this, this needs to be like that, which is also a part that helps us improve and learn, but sometimes it's just too much.
Yeah. Do you ever feel like it's a chore? Have you ever felt like you needed to take a break from improvisation yourself?
I think for me, it's been a little bit different, because for me, I think this relationship with my inner judge sometimes just made me feel that I'll never be good as an improviser and I should just quit altogether. Not because I'm bored, but because I'm desperate or I don't believe in myself enough.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because to me sometimes I feel like helping other people be creative and engage in playing is much easier than telling it to myself. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah.
As a therapist, especially?
definitely, it's so much easier to tell other people what to do than to tell yourself, you know, what to think, what to feel, or how to act. And we always, you know, we have such higher standards for ourselves and for other people. And I read this beautiful quote from like a writer's thing on Facebook, and it said that when you read your own material, it always sounds boring, because you've read your material, you know, hundreds of times, but other people haven't. So sometimes mm-hmm. when we're acting, when we're doing our things on stage, it feels to us oh, this is boring, I've done it so often, I'm not finding anything new. But it's because, you know, we're our regular audience, so we always see what we do. And other people will not experience it that way.
Yeah, it also, I think this is a very nice thought, because it also makes you humble, right? It makes you appreciate a compliment from the audience more, and you don't go, oh, yeah, but you don't know what you're talking about, because I'm doing this all the time and I'm so bored with myself. But you can honestly go, oh, that's nice. I appreciate you liking my idea, or liking this character, or just liking me on stage in general.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think there's just, it's a cultural thing, I think, in Western culture today, to keep producing new things. There's this insane value on newness. And I think part of improvisation, part of the charm of improv is, oh, this is new. It keeps coming up. It's this endless spring or fountain that keeps spouting out new things. But it makes us kind of lose sight of, you know, the value of routines, or the value of things that are the same, that repeat themselves.
A drama therapist, mm-hmm. and you're also an improviser,
yep.
and you're also a translator, and you're also an editor. Is that correct?
Yes. I have to pay the bills somehow. And improv right now, at least in Israel, and you know, in a lot more places, it's very hard to make a living doing just that. And I think for me, this is a very good combination, because I have very extroverted sides and very introverted sides. So I need some days just to sit at home in front of the computer and not communicate with anybody. And some days, you know, go out and party and do workshops and shows and be surrounded by people.
So you know what? To me, that makes a lot of sense. And also, I think there are very few people in the world who are just improvisers.
Mm-hmm.
Many people do other things as well. And I always find it super interesting to find out what it is that they're doing. Some are scientists, some are writers. There's so many different things, because it's a unique quality that they bring to their way of improvising,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that being a translator, being an editor, being a therapist makes your improvisation richer?
Yeah, definitely. I think I bring into my improvisation a very powerful verbal capacity, especially when I improvise in Hebrew, which is my native language. I feel like I have a lot of freedom to use words in a way that is maybe more poetic than most people. And I think because I'm a therapist, but also because I'm interested in improv that is more deep and emotional, I think these kind of two things go together. I think this leads me to explore kind of vulnerabilities in characters, or difficult emotional situations in characters, or in relationships on stage, which can be very rewarding.
Nice. So Amir, I prepared a little game.
Yeah.
Because we haven't... I took a workshop with you once, and we chatted a bit afterwards, but we don't know each other that well.
Yeah.
And so I made a list of words, and I'll read them to you,
mm-hmm.
and you'll just give me the first thing that you associate with that word. It could be another word, it could be a sentence, it could be an anecdote, whatever comes to mind.
All right.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Great. Okay. Wine.
Wine. wine makes me think about Corona dating, which, because we had this lockdown for forever, then we just had to go on dates, like in the city square, or sit on some bench. So I would always get like a bottle of wine and a couple of glasses, and then go meet a stranger. And sometimes it was nice, and sometimes it wasn't.
All right, Corona dating. Next word is chickens.
Chickens. Wow, this makes me think of a friend of mine who lives in Greece, and she's a British woman. And she would always call her friends chickens. It was so nice.
Why?
It was very endearing. I don't know why. It's like, oh, chickens. It was just lovely.
Like that's very sweet.
Yeah.
How about the next word, which is zodiac signs?
Ooh. So I'm a Scorpio.
That means your birthday is which month?
It's November.
November, okay.
Yeah. And there's this thing about Scorpios. It's like we're very sensitive. We take a long time to trust. We're also very creative, very deep. Always when I read horoscopes, it's like they're warning all the other signs not to date us. So I don't know. Yeah, it's hard to believe that our destiny is written in the stars. But a couple of years ago, I have a friend who's an amateur astrologist. And I asked her to make a map of the stars for me and my then girlfriend. And she said, this was pretty early on in our relationship, she said, like, you're not such a great match, but you'll have a lot of adventures together. And that turned out to be very true. So.
Cool. Do you believe in self-fulfilling prophecy also? So you look for that adventure maybe?
Oh, of course. Of course.
Yeah.
That's most of what happens in human life. It's self-fulfilling prophecies.
To me, that's also a bit of a scary thought. You know, you think something's going to happen and then it will. And it makes you so frustrated because you go, if I should just stop, you know, thinking that because I can make it not happen by not thinking about it.
Yeah, that's there's a lot of really interesting concepts about it. If you want to get psychological.
I want to get psychological right now.
So maybe these are things that are also kind of, I'll try to connect them to improv too. Have you heard of the Jewish psychologist and philosopher Viktor Frankl?
I have, yeah.
So he wrote Man in Search of Meaning, and he developed like this whole method of therapy that is focused on the sense of meaning. And one of the pathologies that he defined is called hyperintention, which is because you're trying too hard to do something, you can't do it, which is what happens to us in improv all the time, especially mm-hmm. when we're anxious or when we're just beginners, like we want this thing to happen and it just doesn't. We get too many ideas, we stop listening, we get nervous, we start blocking and saying no. That's hyperintention. And another thing, kind of riffing off of what you said, is what Freud defined as omnipotence of thoughts. Is that we think that our thoughts can affect reality in this like direct way. So I'm sitting on the plane, this is like the classic example, and I'm trying not to look at the wings because I know that if I stare at the wing, then something will happen, the engine will explode, we'll all die. And this is usually not true, but the fun part in improv is that it on stage it is true, because what we think and what we say in that kind of imaginary space happens.
All right, I'll keep that in mind. But now I want to know what you associate with Harry Potter.
Oh, wow. So, me and my girlfriend, we've been watching all the movies. We just, like 2 days ago, we just finished the second to last one.
Mm.
So we only have the one final one to go. And I'm very excited. I don't know what happens at the end. I've only read half of the books, so
oh I don't know. Oh my God, like, just when I thought we were going to be friends, Amir.
What do you mean? What?
How can you, you know, when people say, I haven't read Harry Potter, I can go, okay, you know, you made that decision and that's okay. But if you started reading the books and then you decided midway that you wouldn't continue, that is just something that my mind cannot process.
Mm. Well, so let me ask you that, Lena. How old were you when you read them?
Oh, that's a good question. I was 10. I was Harry's age.
Yeah, so I think when it came out, I was a little older already. I was like 15 or something. And I only got around to reading them. Actually, I was listening to them on audiobooks about 2 years ago. And mm-hmm. they are insanely repetitive. They are so repetitive. It's no. like every book is the same. Oh, a new teacher is coming, but oh, there's a problem with them, and oh, we need to solve it, and oh, there's a mystery, and oh, we discovered it. It's like, oh, come on.
I'm crying on the inside.
I mean, the world is lovely and the characters are lovely and it's super cool and it's an amazing literary achievement, but it wasn't working for me.
Ah, interesting. Well, when you've watched the last one, I'd love to talk to you about it because I have some thoughts on the ending.
Okay, no spoilers. Okay.
No, I'm not going to spoil you. That's, you know, I was spoiled because when the seventh book came out, two friends of mine and me, we at 6 in the morning, 6 a.m., we walked to the bookstore, we got the book. And we basically, wow. all of us, we just read the entire weekend. But I was a slow reader, so I didn't finish in time. And on Monday, somebody told me the end. And luckily, I thought it was so absurd, I didn't believe it. So it wasn't an actual spoiler. But he tried to spoil me, and I haven't talked to him since.
Wow. That makes me think, like, when I was a kid, I used to read a lot. Like, a lot. I would read, like, 2 books a week.
Wow.
And I miss that ability. I miss that capacity to just lose yourself in a book for, like, a day.
Yeah.
I miss that.
Do you think that Netflix and Amazon Prime and all these, all of those make it harder to actually focus on a book?
I think a lot of our culture has become designed to create effortless experiences for us. Mm-hmm. So we just need to be there and be very, very passive, and the thing will do all the work. I remember I had this very kind of vivid experience a few years ago. I went to a museum, and I was looking at a painting, and my mind kind of projected, you know, this YouTube thing where it's kind of loading. It has like this little loading circle. So my mind was like waiting for the painting to come alive and do the work for me instead of me just kind of looking and feeling and exploring and seeing what associations comes up. So I think a lot of our culture is based on that. And what I like about improv is that it's a genre that invites us it asks us to come, to make a step forward towards the art form instead of just sitting back in our seats.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand what you mean. It's almost a different commitment.
In therapy, we talk about contracts or settings. So, like, what is the contract between me and the patient? Or what is the contract between me as a performer and the audience member? And I think there's something about improv, because it's so minimal, because it's such a minimalistic art form, just a bare stage, maybe a chair. So we have this contract with the audience that we are all now, for the next hour, going to surrender to our imagination and our collective imagination. And we're going to create a reality out of nothing, which takes a lot of a lot of focus, a lot of energy, a lot of kind of willingness to let ourselves go into that, which I think is beautiful.
Bit of research, what you do, and I heard you talk about an Edgar Carret format that you do, right? Is that full disclosure, I never quite understood that in style of improvisation. I enjoy watching it, or many shows I enjoy watching. I just never understood what is the inspiration behind it.
I sometimes have this lecture that I give about improv formats, and when I talk about improv in the style of, there's usually a couple of categories. I think like the most basic way of doing it is just you take very general tropes, like horror movies, so we know that there's like a serial killer or something. We don't need to commit to a lot more than that. if you want to take it a step further, then you also, you take kind of like locations and maybe costumes. So you're more into that. And I think on a deeper level, and that's what we did with the Edgar Caret format, is we went structural. Mm-hmm. So that format was actually based, I used to study comparative literature. And one of the studies that I did during my master's is I took, I think, about 50 stories by Edgar Caret, and I kind of like disassembled them into their basic building blocks. And what I discovered was that a lot of the stories are built around a simple seven-step structure. The Edgar Caret classical story, it begins with a banal everyday situation. I'm moving in with my new girlfriend, or in Israel it would be like I just joined the military, or I just started a new job, just something banal. Step number two, a problem. Something's wrong. Step number three is the introduction of an unrelated element, something completely unrelated, pretty random. It could be like a puppy or tickets to see a show, or, you know, the downstairs neighbor is playing the piano. Step number four would be this random element creates a fantastic twist. Edgar Caret has this beautiful thing in his writing where he creates this beautiful transition from the everyday to the fantastic or the magical. Step number five, the fantastic twist solves the problem, which is great, so everybody's happy. But step number six is it then makes it worse.
Oh.
And step number seven is kind of like what I like to call an aporia, which is a dead end. And sometimes it's kind of like going back to the original starting point, but it's a little worse.
Mm-hmm.
So Edgar Caret is a very, structurally very pessimistic author.
Sounds like it, yeah.
And there is this beautiful kind of comment on imagination saying that we feel like we want to believe that fantasy will solve our problems, but it ends up making it worse.
Do you agree?
No, that's why I'm an improviser and a drama therapist. I think imagination is the best thing we have.
Yeah, but then it's... But then, again, this is interesting to me because you as a person, you say, I don't really believe that's it, but you're interested in putting it on stage in a format.
Yeah, because I think it's beautiful to watch. It's very, very interesting to watch. Discovering this fantastic twist is always a pleasure, and it gives us a chance to do like really nice technical stuff like montages or mm-hmm. A lot of technical stuff in improv, which I always find the technical aspect of our work can be very impressive. Just seeing people do complicated edits or very intricate scene work, like working with split scenes or, you know, with pivots where you kind of run back and forth between different scenes. I think that's an aspect that is sometimes kind of underappreciated in improv. But I think when you're technically competent, it makes it just so beautiful to watch.
Yeah, I agree. Sometimes I feel like improvisers will say, well, it's improvised. We can improvise everything in a format. So I agree with you that it's nice to have something that's really highly developed technically. It makes it elegant.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So thank you mm-hmm. for giving me insight on this. I'll think about it, see if I change my mind about In the Style Of shows.
What I will say about improv In the Style Of is that I think, because we're constantly working with the audience expectations, so I think this just gives us more to start with in terms of expectations. We're telling them, you can expect this thing that you love and enjoy from other places in your life, and we're going to work with that circle of expectations, if you're using the Keith Johnstone term.
So, Amir, tell me about about City of My Heart, of your project.
Ah.
Oh, it's nice to see you light up.
So it started a few months ago, I think. I don't remember if it's first lockdown, second lockdown. Time is a mush. I don't know who, where, when are we. So we had this thing in Israel where we were limited to a 1,000 meter radius. We couldn't go any further. And people were very isolated. People felt very alone. And in general, both as a drama therapist and as a person, I really believe in rituals and in the power of rituals that we create ourselves for ourselves to be very uplifting or healing. For me, it was just a way of creating connection. To have people just recording themselves for like 15 or 20 minutes, walking around their city in this kind of very changed urban landscape, which was now, you know, maybe the shops are closed, maybe there's a lot less people, maybe there's police or military in some places. A very, very different vibe. And just exploring this environment, seeing what they feel or what they see or what they think. For me, it was just this opportunity to connect the intimate and special experience that we have when we walk around our spaces with other people in their spaces.
Yeah, I mean, people from many different places contributed, right? India, Amsterdam, Poland.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We had a bunch of different people from different places. And for me, it was always so moving, even just hearing like a different background noise. It's almost like traveling. It's almost like being there. Like you can close your eyes, let somebody else take you on a little stroll down their street. I was very, very happy with that. And I'm hoping we can get another wave of recordings now that there is another wave of Corona.
So everybody can contribute?
Yeah, yeah, it's open to everybody. It's very, very simple. But actually for the next cycle, I thought about maybe adding a challenge, which is I want people to perform what I call acts of urban magic, which is kind of like these little spells that you do with your city. I know that I have them. I don't know if other people have them, but I know that there are some places in my city that I will go and something special will happen. It could be there's this corner on the boardwalk next to the beach where you suddenly turn a corner and you see the sea. And there's just something amazing about that little spatial transition. Finding these places where we can work magic just by moving around the space, I think that's going to be an interesting challenge.
You know what? I think now I'm going to, next time I go out of the house, I'm going to be really aware of that.
Uh-huh.
It's nice. It makes you really be in the moment and go, where is my magic place? What happens when I turn this corner? No, that's not it. Maybe the next one. But that's an interesting thing that I never noticed before. Yeah, yeah. Nice.
Wonderful.
I like it. So you can find it on Facebook?
Yeah, you just look for City of My Heart and it's all there.
Nice. So people can check it out. Perfect. So Amir, I found on the internet, because the internet never forgets anything,
mm-hmm.
I found a short story that you wrote.
Oh, wow.
And you actually, I hope that's the right Amir that I found online.
Many years ago, I had a blog. And one of the projects that I did was I tried looking for all the people with my exact same name in Israel. And there are two more with my exact same name. And I Googled the hell out of them. So I found out that one is a lawyer who plays, I don't know the name of the sport in English, but it's like a weird version of volleyball. And the second, well, that was true like 10 years ago. He was a wannabe model. So I'm not
That's
sure that
so
any
cool.
of them are into short prose, but I think we're pretty
safe. But Amir,
safe.
That would be a great format, the Amirs. And you'll just hop into the different lives of the three Amirs that exist.
That's,
I would watch
that's
that.
That's cool, yeah. You can Google your name and see what the alternate you does. That's wonderful. It's a great
I'm
idea,
I'm going
Lena.
To do that first thing after we stop recording.
Ah, beautiful.
So I found your short story, Late Bloomers.
Aw.
and I read it and I thought it was really beautiful. And I would like to ask you if it'd be okay if I read a short passage from it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Cool, okay. It's these dreams they put into us, you know, dangling them in front of us. I guarantee you not one person we know has any idea of who and what they are beyond those pre-made dreams. And maybe we're supposed to feel small. I mean, look at us. Why do we need to be important? We're all so disposable, so replaceable, and all we do is try and find people for whom we won't be those things. People who could keep us and never replace us. But I think of myself, and I keep getting this image of a plastic cup, this $5 Starbucks latte just after someone's thrown it in the garbage. And it's still midair, and it's branded, and there's a million just like it, and it's empty and used. But now it's free. It's flying. It's bent and stained and unsellable. And it's not a fucking product anymore.
Wow.
I think this is really beautiful.
Thank you.
What made you write this?
So, actually, the story started as a dare at SWIMP, the Swedish Improv Festival in Uppsala. I think we were sitting for breakfast at the hostel, you know, the Improv Festival hostel, the classic hostel where everybody meets and just chats for breakfast. And there was this really great guy, really sweet improviser from London, Ed Farger. And I don't remember how it came up, but I confessed to him that I always had a dream of being a writer. And he told me that he also loves writing. And we agreed on this challenge that everybody, like each of us would give the other person a starting line. And then the other person would have to write a story starting with that line. And
cool.
So that's how the story started. And I think it was in a time when I was in a very kind of like dark and desperate place in a previous relationship. It felt very hopeless and very lonely in there. So I think I put a lot of that sadness and that despair into that.
Yeah, well, it has that feel to it. People should really check it out. They can Google you and find it. I'm not going to say anything more about it. But it's a nice story. It's even won a prize or something on that website. Hey.
Yeah. I got money for it. I got like I don't know.
Really?
Yeah, I got like a few $100. It was super great.
Wow, that's nice.
Yeah.
Great, Amir. Thank you so much for talking to me. It's been a real pleasure getting to know you and talking about different things. And thank you so much for your very professional advice as a drama therapist about my problem.
Well, Lena, I have to say two things. First of all, I feel that it was really such a gift to be here because it felt very, very touching to have all these things that I've done and didn't even remember that I did kind of reflected back to me. It's very heartwarming and I think very needed in this time. And second, I don't feel that I've really solved your problem. And as a therapist, I feel like we should have a deeper conversation about your issues with improv. So I'm inviting you to step a little deeper.
Ah, that's the therapist face. I was waiting for it. If you could see it. I can see it, the therapist face. No, we should. I think I've gotten some interesting insight, and that's only the first step. I know that it takes a lot of work to patch things up, but I'm fairly confident. Okay. Thank you so much, Amir.
Good. Thank you, Lena. It's been wonderful.
That was my conversation with Amir Atzmon from Tel Aviv. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Greetings to wherever you're listening from.